Alrighty, and welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Soli. We're always just down to interview someone about the world of entertainment and its ever-changing presence. Here with me tonight is actress, comedian, writer, and director Tara Erickson. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Anytime. She has worked on the short films Prime of Your Life, as well as the horror comedy A Real Killjoy, which she is turning into a web series. She's also authored the book for kids, Drew the Lonely Dragon. You heard it there, folks. Welcome,
Miss Erickson. Thank you. Yeah, it's been fun. And actually, A Real Killjoy, we're turning it into a feature film now.
Oh, there you go. Keep going.
It could go either way, but yeah.
This was just so much fun. This interview happened by chance. I interviewed one of Tara's pals, and she's like, I got stories to tell. And I'm like, oh, bring it. Who was your mentor who told you you could really tackle this head first?
Don't know if I actually have a specific mentor. I think when you live in LA long enough, you realize you have to make your own dreams come true. If you don't happen to be in the exact right place at the exact right time, because this city is filled with a lot of talented people, opportunities will come and go. And it really all just depends on representation and whether you have it at a good time or not. And sometimes I do and I don't. And then I realized, after a few years, I'm just going to focus on making my own stuff, building out a world that I would like to see myself in as an actor and going from there. And then instead of just waiting for casting to, come along and find me, which there's many days when I don't have auditions. So keeping the muscle working by doing a bunch of stuff, makes me feel like I'm still doing the thing.
Very nice. And altogether, did you have a very reliable acting professor?
Did you say acting professor?
Yeah, acting coach.
I went to school, American Musical and Dramatic Academy. So we had a bunch of different teachers there, acting wise. I will give a shout out to Barbara Schofield. She was a fun teacher at my school, but it's been a while since I've been in her classes. And I sort of bounce around in LA. There's a bunch of different acting schools out here just to work the muscle. But I think the biggest learning lesson for me has always been to just be on set and make films. And when I first got hired as an actor for larger feature films, that's when a lot of the learning happens, so that I'm able to do now a lot of different things. Directing, also producing, and then I also edit all of my own stuff as well.
Sweet. You got total control now.
Yeah.
What performers did you just notice that you were studying more than usual? It's like, these are my icons. That's where it all hit you.
Oh man. Icons. I feel like everyone's just gonna say like Meryl Streep, because she's great. Just when you look at her, she's everything, and she's just so charming and believable. She's great. I really would love to give a great answer to this, but I feel like there's so many, lately I'm a big fan of Elizabeth Banks because she started her own production company. And she also just directed Cocaine Bear, which I'm like, hell yeah. So she's an actor who's moved into directing and making her own stuff with her own production company. Same with Reese Witherspoon. She has Hello Sunshine. She's producing a lot of shows. And I enjoy kind of the boss girl status of that. And also when they're on screen, I love them too. They're awesome. But I recognize the hustle within what they are doing. And I know that they were able to do that based off the success that they've had as actresses. Right. And being able to move on to start a large production company is awesome. that would be a dream if I'm able to just have a company of great people around. But that has to come with obviously a very large budget. Right. But eventually, hopefully, that would be a great thing to have.
Totally. So I had the graciousness, since I watched just about every other psycho thriller, of seeing The Good Nanny, which was retitled The Twisted Doctor or whatever, I think. It was by Asylum for Lifetime.
Yeah, The Twisted Nanny, which then was retitled into The Nightmare House. And I think it's available in under both names. I have no idea.
It's on Amazon. I know your resume said it was like under Shudder, and you know how it is. Streaming platforms will change like every 5 months
now. Yeah, and apparently the title of films, which is weird.
Hey, Asylum likes to joke around. You're definitely, we're having a blast in this film. Most importantly, how was that experience for you?
Oh, that was a lot of fun. I mean, what's funny is that on day one, I mean, I was called a couple days before, oh, you got the job. I think it was the night before, and they're like, you film tomorrow morning, and then they send me the sides, and it's 12 pages of dialogue. And
you're like, what the hell, guys? Yeah, thank you, but really, right? Come on.
It's a lot. But I mean, as a professional, I'm like, cool, I can handle it. But what was extra funny is that it was the most intense emotional scenes that we were filming on day one. And I'm like, really? All right, we're just really getting into this, meaning like, I got to show some intensity, have some tears ready. And then that was fine. It just was intense for day one to have to like run into that. But overall, I loved making that film. The director, Remo Piney, was really, really great as a director. Just gave really simple notes, knew exactly what he wanted, which made it easier for me as an actor.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
What do you mainly look for in a film set? Obviously, you know, everyone expects to have, you know, remain focused and everyone not, you know, beat each other up and be professional. But what are some factors where you just really can tell, okay, everyone's got it together, I don't have to voice an opinion or concern?
Yeah. Well, there's still even really great films that call all of my one pet peeve. Don't call everyone to set all at the same time. I get upset when people are not spacing out actors when they should arrive, be in makeup. After that, you shouldn't be waiting around too long before you have to get to work. That's like my one pet peeve. And it still happens on really large indies where they're just like, all the cast and crew arrives at 3 and everyone else at 4. And like, you don't work until 10 PM. That I hate. And I'm like, it happens more, of course, maybe on short films and other stuff that I'm like, oh, right. They kind of probably don't have a shot list maybe. And they haven't put a whole lot of thought into this, which, that is one thing I don't enjoy. Because even for A Real Killjoy, which was a 3-minute short film, I had a shot list and we've only filmed we got in and out for 4 hours because it's guerrilla filmmaking. I still had Mary, who plays Melissa, come at her call time, which was not the whole 4 hours, which was like right at the end. Yeah, so that's like one thing that gets to me when I'm on a set. But overall, I think you can really tell when a good set is together is when the director and the DP and the AD really like come together on what they want. Because the DP needs to give you the vision and pull that from the director as to what he wants. And the AD is really what gets everyone together and moving, right? Calls action, calls cut. It's kind of a leeway between the director and the DP when you're on a larger project. So if they all get along and you get along with the DP and the AD, there's times, I think even on Twisted Nanny, where I would look at the DP if the director was still in Video Village, and I would just go, I would hold up one finger for like one more take, and he would go, yeah, I think we can go again and get another take. Because I didn't want to bug Remo. Remo was great. He would just go, I think he's like, he loved it. But for me, I had a lot of a good relationship with a good DP. They'll go, I feel like she wants to, all right, can we go again? That wasn't great for camera, even though it was fine, which is awesome.
Yeah, just something. Sometimes the blooper is what you cut back to for 5 seconds. You never know. And I'm glad you pointed that out. I have been on so many shit shows and indie films, and often you can tell someone has no time management if they invite everyone there and then they go, you know, 2 hours later. Oh, by the way, can you come back next week? We're going to shoot this instead. I'm like, then what is the point of the schedule?
Right. Yeah.
It's like you can be very entertained and want to do this all you want, but if you got no time management, you won't get far. But yeah, no, that's a good point. The cinematographer can easily override everyone because he's like the visual interpreter of it all. And if the director gets fired or we're seeing a few scandals where ADs know all these insights because they're the ones who kind of got to be the body shield in a way. Just going and making sure and saying, hey, hate to bug you, but you're needed back. We got to redo the shot.
Right. Totally.
Director's bugging me to bug you.
Absolutely.
Man, oh man. So I saw that you studied under director Howard Dutch, you know, husband of Leah Thompson, who's worked on so many John Hughes movies and TV. Yeah. How was he masterclass?
Yeah, that was great. That was a long time ago. Man, that feels like a lifetime ago. he's awesome. He's really, he is really good at speaking to actors and giving them a very precise yet limited, like he doesn't go on forever, yet limited amount of notes to be able to redirect a performance for where it needs to go.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I think the biggest thing in learning in a live theater class, which is why I'm like, oh, that was a long time ago, is that you mostly get to see other people go up, do their performances, how he would redirect them, and then see that performance change with his direction and his notes, and then getting a chance also to perform, which was awesome.
Very nice.
Yeah.
You know, you moved through the ranks. You've done all kinds of, you know, featured acting background as well as stand up. What just gets you going in the morning where you're just like, I'm going to kick some ass today. I'm really going to focus and become
my Adderall.
Adderall. There you go.
which I actually need. But I guess I would say, sometimes it's really tough. I just spoke at a film festival that it's like a panel, like an actor's. Yeah. And they put me on a panel that was called an actor's path, like a way to maybe success. I think maybe it was called. And I really just spoke pretty earnestly of like, this career can be is really, really hard when you're not a name and you're not consistently working and you don't have, let's say, great theatrical reps that can send you out for bigger, like TV and bigger film stuff, right? If you're kind of stuck in either commercial land or indie film, it can be just really hard. So every morning, I think what gets me going is it's more the thought that when you're living here in LA, what reminds me the most of why I'm here is like when I'm driving on the freeway and I see the LA city, the skyline. And I just think like, there's a lot of people that would like to live in Los Angeles and have the chance to do what I'm doing and either didn't take the chance or maybe they left and they were like, they stopped believing in themselves.
It's like they disappear into that abyss. You'll never know if they'll return to it or if they cheated a few other people out of a job, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what keeps me going is that I'm like, I'm in the city of dreams, baby. And every day I'm trying to work more and create more every day on whatever it may be. You know, and so I'm busy a lot with my own stuff, which I think it's gives me good feelings when I can feel productive, whether or not I'm being called in or not. As you know, especially right now, there's a writer strike, so the business is just like absolutely dead. and so it's been really a really slow, tough year. Mm. But keeping my own projects going is what helps me because I think at the end of the day, actors and creatives, we need validation, and you get the validation from the work that you put out. So I try to put out as much as I can.
Probably. You just find ways to stay busy while still, you know, making sure it's professionally run, not over the top and ridiculous.
Right. Exactly.
When did you sign with Aqua Agency?
God, it's been a while. I think it's been like eight or 9 years. I've been with them a long time. They've been a really great agency to be with, and have definitely, I booked a lot of commercials through them. So it's been a lot of fun being with them. 100%. And I'm glad they've kept me on.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's going to listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
I also watch way too much TV, not as much nowadays, but I also had the fortune of seeing American Satan when it premiered on Showtime. Well, why do you think everyone's now kind of tackling true crime elements with Rockstar Life and then spinning into true crime horror? What is it about it that's just so fascinating for any ensemble cast?
Yeah. I think the Rockstar lifestyle has always intrigued people, where they're like, I'm going to see some shit, because you just like associate a Rockstar lifestyle with the sex, drugs, rock and roll. But if there's someone who doesn't necessarily grasp on to those three, it's like 75% of the world really likes true crime, man. So I think combining both makes it a lot of fun, because you're not only just having to sit to see a documentary or a real crime story, which can sometimes be really terrifying. You're seeing actors kind of move throughout a world that combines true crime, which combines two genres together, which are pretty popular in their own right. But if they can come together, you can tap into a larger audience for sure.
1,000%. Well, hell, if you're that interested, I'll be sure to get you on one of our audio dramas one of these days.
Yeah, love it. It's funny, I was just asked to be on a different horror radio project from someone I met on Twitter. Just Twitter is a such a fun, weird place. I know it's changed a lot recently, but
so much.
I've met still a ton of people on there who are either writers or have podcasts and stuff like that, who I've connected with just virtually, and it's been fun.
And the hashtags change literally daily to where you're like, whoa, that's a thing now? I guess I better start using the hashtag.
Right? Yeah.
I know, man. Altogether, with everyone like taking on digital projects, and you embracing short films, what festivals do you really think are really good at picking everyone's brains and really allowing the networking to thrive and continue?
Yeah. I think the two that come to mind would be the ones that I went to with Killjoy, because I couldn't go to all of the festivals for either Pride of Life or Killjoy, but Screamfest, which is in LA, was awesome. They were they chose a real Killjoy like a month before the festival. I didn't think I would be able to get in, but it's run by women. They have and they're really, really awesome. So friendly. They're great at communicating. Normally with a lot of film festivals, they'll put you in and then there's like, if you email them, you may not hear back for a couple weeks because they're drowning. I get it, in submissions and all of that. But Screamfest is really, really great. All of their before parties, after parties, they're very supportive.
Wow.
They try to get a big group going. And then the other one was FilmQuest, which takes place in Utah. And that they have a strong foundation of building a community of film members, either in a Facebook group page, also an Instagram. They get everyone together and they have like tons of parties after every single night. those would be my top two that I would say. And their communication is great. And to me, when you have a film festival that's able to communicate with you quickly and precisely, that's awesome.
Oh, it's 1,000%. To actually value everyone's submission and say, hey, we didn't forget about you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You didn't make it, or we are more likely to want to submit this next year. It might work better. You know, when someone goes the extra mile and just realizes, hey, you know, I realized you worked your ass off, but it just wasn't a fit for what we were looking for. Instead of, well, I don't know what would make it better. Well, you've just done no help for us.
Right. Totally.
So I know you got to go, but one misconception that a lot of people have is that if they're going to get into like improv, they have to be pursuing a comedy world, when it's not necessarily, you know, you don't have to try to be funny. It can help you just make split decisions in the moment. And having been a part of the Groundlings and Upright Citizens Brigade, what were the real takeaways in your experience that you found?
I think improv helps the most, especially if you're going to get into commercial acting.
Oh.
Commercial acting really calls for comedically, and there's a lot of commercials go in a variety of different ways, but a lot of them look for comedy. And if you can bring your own buttons or improv to it, that's how I think I've booked a lot of commercials. So it's helped me mostly with that, of just improv can just teach you to trust your own voice and your own instincts more, because the more you have to get up in front of an audience, or just even a group of your peers, like in class, to improvise something and like you hope it's funny, you kind of throw everything else out the window. You can't have an ego. You just sort of have to rely on the tools they've given you and the rules, and just go for it and trust your instincts. And I think once you go through that and you're in class, you're like, I want to throw up. I mean, stand up is like, I mean, that's probably the most anxiety I ever had. And I'm an actor. So it's like, I wouldn't forget lines or things, and I would still sort of deliver it maybe the way that I rehearsed it. So I never think it was terrible, but that is like a high anxiety. But I think the background also with improv is still high anxiety when you're supposed to go up on stage and like be funny. It's both of the things. And I think once you do it enough, you get used to that feeling of like, yeah, this is how it's going to feel. And you just have to kind of go out and do your job and just rely on the two. And if you've done it enough, you've put in enough hours, the payoff can be seen when you just sort of let it go and go do your thing. I'm not saying go take 10 hours of an improv class and then go and do a stand-up show. It's like put in the time. And then I think naturally it'll all those rules and the stuff that you learned will come out in what you do.
That is a lovely sit down, because I actually lost track of when I was trying out improv, like how many times I would take my glasses off. I don't have to see the shit eating grins in the audience and other people laughing just because, you know, they don't like your face or whatever. Well, what do you recommend for those who, when you inevitably encounter a little snobbery, is there's just a stupid assistant who's just making a stupid face, or I don't know, a prop guy who doesn't like you for whatever prickly reason?
French. And you mean like during like a show or something?
Yeah, just people being people, but yeah, like not in a friendly way, and you're like, I don't know what your problem is, but yeah, last I checked I didn't wrong you, so we're all here for the same thing, we all want the same thing, what's your deal?
Yeah.
Not a confrontation.
I feel like in those moments I try to go, if they have not met me and they don't know me, I have to just say, like, it's not about me, it's mostly about them. If for some reason they just met me and they don't want to be nice or kind or cool, then that's not somebody I want to waste any of my time with. So I just normally with that, which I don't encounter that a lot, gratefully, I think I just ignore it and try to not let it get to me, because that can be like a stomach turning thing when it gets so awkward. You're like, why is this person being so rude or weird to me?
Yeah.
It can set anyone in not a great place, especially if you're trying to go and like have fun and perform.
Even harder if they're higher up, like the director's like right hand or camera assistant happens to be related to like one of the cousins of the studio, and it's like, well, I'm sorry, they're being a horse's ass to me.
Yeah, you're saying like why they don't like mesh with you or something,
or they're getting annoyed that you're not exactly in the frame. I'm like, then direct me. I'll move over five feet.
Yeah, I think that's like I think finding people who are cool, calm, and precise to be on set to be able to direct someone is probably the best way to go. And if someone's not hitting their mark, it should only take a couple of takes to be like, you got to land here, buddy. Otherwise the camera can't focus. Right. I don't think it should be like a big thing. So yeah, I feel like, if you can ignore them, I would. And then the other part is like, yeah, just be overly prepared to go in and do your job and do it really well. And I think when an AD is walking you through a set of like, if you can learn where the camera's going to land and even ask the DP before for a certain take, where do you need me to land so that it's easier for them on a walkthrough. Most of the time the AD is already going to, they'll walk you through that and say, you need to land here, but you can't always rely on, you know, the camera assistant or the DP, or obviously the director's there. That's their job. But I think when you're on a set, a film crew becomes a family if you're there for a long time. And I think everybody has to learn to rely on everybody. If the director's in Video Village and you're like, what's the issue here? Who can I access quickly to try to fix it? And I guess for that, more so like what you were saying is like, that's why it's good if there's like HR, if they're like really being bad, then you're like, hey, I got to talk to the second AD. We've got to like talk to HR, because it's like, this isn't working. And that's why, thank goodness, those professionals are there in existence.
Right. And thank God they're actually now doing their job and listening instead of, you know, 1,000 complaints. And you're like, why is this person still here?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You heard about it on professional stuff like Criminal Minds. And it's like, we're hearing you, but we're taking a while to process it. I'm like, well, everyone needs a job and they're tired of being, you know, mistreated by this DP in this case. But my last question before we go, how do you feel about being a screen queen?
I love it. I wish I could do more. Yeah, I really love the genre, the community that comes with the genre of films that I make. I'm not even a person who was like, I want to be in all horror. It was just happened to be I like zombie stuff. It was just an idea I had. And I thought this could be fun. And then once I put myself in that world, I was like, yeah, let's keep Sam Jones and what she does with zombies. Let's keep it going because I like the world that I built up. And the community that you can find with like a dark comedy horror genre is such a great community of people who they're really supportive and more so than I found with maybe other genres. And it might just be because it's very niche. Horror is maybe not as big as just a general, like, is it a comedy or a drama? horror just has like some fans that are like, we're here to support you. So if I could be an act in more feature films or shorts that put me as a scream queen, I'd be like, I'm so down.
Time to boogie.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. You have anything else you want to promote before I let you go?
Yeah, I mean, just you can Google me, Tara Erickson. I have a YouTube channel under my name, Tara Erickson, TaraErickson. I'm at Tara Erickson on Instagram, at the Tara Erickson on Twitter. Yeah, go and find me, follow me, say hey that you found me through this podcast. And if you're interested or you're in Los Angeles, or even if you just love food and drinks, I started kind of a new venture called LA Eats and Drinks, which is on Instagram. So you can check that out. I'm the host of that. And nice. I make all those videos and edit them. And yeah, that's my spiel. So come find me, say hey.
Badass.
Right. Yeah.
Well, wish you the best at your next Utah visit. And just keep wiping the floor.
Yeah, I hope so, Cam. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
My honor.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a-